You mentioned preaching to the academics, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur shown how to do it in Krishna's Samhita. So how can we explain why Prabhupada didn't follow that line? Prabhupada wanted them to accept everything, what that is.
Of course. But you have to first start somewhere, so they reject you on the first, you know, interaction, and how you're going to get them farther.
But Srila Prabhupada kind of from the first hand.
But he just
stresses
just,
this.
Yeah, yeah, of course. But who is he talking to? Do the Westerners know anything about the Vedas? So they don't have a problem with any of these. They're not going to ask, what about hell? What about the demigods? What about people that are, you know, taller, the four yugas? Do they know any of this?
Because I think I understand, because Krishna Samhita was aimed at the Indian intellectuals who were brought up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you still have that same thing going on today. It means it's like this. There are 1 billion Indians in India. 1 billion. There's 6 billion people on the planet. So that's 1/6. And that's the Indians in India. There's hundreds of millions outside of India. So therefore, it's not a bad preaching tool to have. The main thing is logic. That's the thing, is they like logic. So Prabhupada would just sidestep that and go straight into logic. So he wouldn't even deal with those things. Right? So he would just discuss on logic, but Bhaktivinoda was discussing on the scriptures. He was trying to get them interested in Bhagavatam by taking a fresh look at Bhagavatam. Right? So they knew about these things. So therefore the approach is a little different. If they don't know, you just straight go into where the problem is. Right? Because they don't have anything. That's why you don't preach to the faithless, because then you give them things which they can then become faithless about. Because their faithlessness is kind of generic. It doesn't have any direction. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you don't give them things to focus on so they can be faithless. Does that make sense? Yeah, it's just tools. The method is to get to a point that relates to the person and speak on that. That's the principle. So this is a side tool, it's not a major thing. So it's not that it's that essential and important. It was just being brought up as a usage. Is that okay?
Yeah, thank you. Another thing is that, like women don't worship and grihasthas don't worship the fierce forms of Narasimha. So like sometimes we hear that the Lord is one's material situation is a different thing to the Lord, because the relationship between the Lord and
that's a difference, but you're not that, right? I mean, the conditioned soul identifies as a grihastha, this is my wife. You understand? So if you're with wife, how can you worship a form of the Lord that doesn't have? Why is it you're transcendental and he's not? Why can't it be that's the way the Lord likes it? Right? Otherwise, why is it that Lakshmi didn't immediately come up and sit on his lap? Who came? Prahlad. Not the demigods. Who arranged Prahlad? Narad Muni, another celibate. So if none of the demigods and Lakshmi can't go before the Lord and worship, how do you think you're going to do it? And then you're going to quote philosophy, oh, we're not these bodies, we're this, that. So if you're not this body, then why are you married in the first place? If you're not this body, why would you get married? Because what are you marrying? You're marrying souls? You're marrying bodies. You know what I'm saying? So this is a misuse of the philosophy. Just because we can't contain our desire. Right? It's the same Lord, and he's very nice in these other forms. Lakshmi Nrisimha, Yoga Nrisimha, they're very nice forms. And they reciprocate very nicely, you know?
So in other words, this regulation for Nrisimha Dev is, let's say, following the Nrisimha's mood.
Yes.
You can say.
Yeah. It means everything, any regulation is following the Lord's mood. Right? How does Krishna deal with the gopis? You ever see him yelling at them, pointing, you know, blaming them? Every once in one pastime? They do it to him, but does you ever see him do it back? No, so that's his move. That's how he deals with women. So that's why the rule is there. Even in anger, you never displease your women. So you can say, oh, it's just a rule, but it's Krishna's mood. This is a personal thing. It's God and what he does. So if you want to be an associate of God, then you have to have the same values as God. Right? We can't be unlimited and this and that, but we can have these same values. God's a person. We can have the same, you know, importance and the same methods. And, right? That's what's meant by oneness in the mood, or oneness in, you know, purpose. You know? We're never one in existence. Right? He's unlimited, we're small. Right? You know, we're finite. You can define our size. His you can't. Right? You know, we're 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. It's pretty specific. You know? And pretty small. You know? You know what I'm saying? But the mood can be exactly the same. So that's what the whole culture is simply what is God's mood and how he interacts with his devotees. Then that is formalized into a set of rules called, you know, the Vedic culture.
Which ultimately trains us in
the spiritual culture. That's if we like it. Because it's just like this. Just like the lady militates against covering her head. Okay, if she's a South Indian, I don't have no problem. Because none of them do. Right? But North Indians, they do. And where does it come from? Because originally the North Indian means language in India is Sanskrit, right? Then you have the local language. So for North, the local language is Braj Bhasha. Right? And then over here it's Bengali. So that means that culture is the culture that's spread throughout. Right? And so the gopis in Vrindavan cover their head. So if you don't like that, then how would you like Radharani? How are you going to go dress Radharani and cover her head when you won't cover your head? Because you think you look better without covering it. So actually that means you don't think Radharani looks her best. Hey, dressing it's nice, it's aesthetics, but where's the devotion? That I'm making Radharani look the most beautiful. Because if I am, then why, as a woman who is interested in looking the most beautiful I can, not cover my head? Because guaranteed, that woman, she may say, I know, I don't bother with that. She's bothering with that. It's a lie to say any woman is not trying to look her best. So therefore, not only is it they don't understand who they are, they don't understand who Krishna and his devotees are. They don't understand culture, they don't understand relationships. All they understand is whatever they want, that's all there is. But fortunately, they turn to Krishna for being the center of the universe. So that's what it says. Anyone, what is it? Sarva, what is it? The one about whether you're a karmi, a jnani, a yogi, a moksha kamava, you know, all that. Yeah, it means you go turn to the Lord. So they've come to the right place. You want to be the center of the universe, is the only person that can give it to you. So that's good. That's why they're called a devotee. But as far as culture goes, there's a serious vacuum here. You know what I'm saying? So the point is this is a cult. Bhagavatam itself says it's a cultural revolution. Culture, that's how you're going to take off. Philosophy, we convince people. But they only dedicate themselves when there's culture. Right? They only commit themselves when there's culture. Right? How do you live a Western cultural lifestyle without meat-eating, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling? How do you live it? It doesn't exist. It's based on that. That's the four pillars of Western existence. How do you base it? So therefore, how can you stick to that culture so dogmatically without its basis? You know what I'm saying? Women dress in the Western way to sexually attract people. Right? Or, if not, to prove that they are sexually attractive. So then, why would we want to follow a culture that basis, their whole basis is that? You understand? So therefore it comes back is, why would the question come up? If Nrisimhadeva doesn't like it, then where does it come into us? Why are we philosophizing on something that he said he doesn't want? You know what I'm saying? Why would we come up with philosophy, no, but devotional service is beyond all that? Well, if devotional service is beyond all that, it's also beyond eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Why don't you give those up also? Yayati, he was living in the forest, not eating or sleeping or drinking water, only living on air for a whole year. And not even talking. So go for it. Oh, we just chant Hare Krishna. We don't worry about all that. Okay, then just chant. Why is it that every time we have something, you have a nice little argument that will defend your particular conditioned nature and your sense gratification that you can do whatever you want without having to follow any authority? You understand? This is the mentality that we have to be very careful about. Is that I use the philosophy simply to justify my conditioning. No. The philosophy is there to engage your conditioning, not to justify. It's nonsense, whatever it is. That someone's a Brahman or something, it's all nonsense. Because they're not, they're the soul. But of it, then engaging these qualities in the Lord's service, that is nice. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's just like, you know, you deep fry a potato, right? Do you deep fry a squash? Yes, we're making deep fried Lao bhaji today, right? Ever heard of it? No. It doesn't work. Of course, the best is fried ice cream. But. Yes.
You could try some jinga.
What?
Jinga.
Jinga, yeah, that might be also another good one. I wonder what would happen if you fried a jinga. It'd probably come out a little taste of that pig, right? Well, I guess if you peeled it, you know, and cut it, you know, in quarters or half, and then take out the season, that full size deep fried, then you might end up with something big enough you can pick up without a tweezers or something. You understand? So there are things you can say, no, but it's true. I want to, you know, deep fry jinga. You know, why are you stopping me? You know, it's kind of like, it sounds, and you hear it, you laugh at it. But the thing is if I change it into something else, oh, why can't I do, or why can't my daughter do what she wants, or my son, and why can't they just experience, then immediately everyone takes it very seriously. But it's just as stupid. Just as stupid. Oh, you know, my little child, he wants to come up and, you know, do the artik for the deity. No, he's a kid. He doesn't just because he wants. Yeah, have your own picture at home. No, but he wants to worship here. Why can't you let him worship? Ever try being a pujari here? You hear it constantly. Right? Sentimentally attached grihasas trying to break all rules for their own personal family member. But if it was someone else's, then they would complain. Oh, why is it allowing? Don't they know the rules? But it's their own kid? No problem. So that's my point is, attachment cannot overcome devotion. We're supposed to change material attachment to spiritual attachment. That means to Krishna and what Krishna likes. But we can't maintain our attachments at the expenses of Krishna's desire. Right? We can engage our desire. So, okay, I want to cook, you know, some non-Vedic food stuff for Krishna. But I do that with devotion because I think it's nice. So therefore I'm offering it. Right? So the devotion is there. The form of it may not be something, you know, interesting or not, but the devotion is. Right? Does that make sense? It's because that's what I know how to cook, that's what I like. But to say that the other one, oh, why do we have to cook that? That's not, then you're becoming, that's a suric nature. Right? What's the difference between a malecha and a yavana? Can you explain? Simplest definition means there's all kinds of other geographic and this and that. Simplest is a malecha is a meat eater. A yavana is one who is against the Vedic, you know, principles. You understand? That's why yavanas are worse than malechas. Malecha can be a pious meat eater who doesn't really know anything. They're nice people in that. But yavana means they're opposed to the Vedic. And if the Vedas say it, they don't like it. So we have to be very, very careful to avoid that. Just because we're devotees doesn't mean that we also follow yavana culture. You know? It means, in other words, I like this, I offer it to Krishna, that's fine. But the Vedic stuff is nonsense, you know, that's crazy, who would want to eat that? So therefore I'm cooking this, which is superior food. That's yavana. But at least they engage in Krishna service, so you get benefit there. So that's why, you know, the devotional service is transcendental to your mundane concepts of it. That's actually the thing. So when you're saying, but we're transcendental in this and that, it means, yes, devotional service is transcendental to your present mundane presentation of it. But it still doesn't mean that it's pleasing to the Lord. Does that make sense?
This is, you want to say that it's transcendental to the one's mundane presentation of it, because one still gets benefit out of it.
One gets benefit, but not as much as if, just like, let's say, the Grihastha does worship Nrisingadev. One, it's not very pleasing, because if he knows that and he goes ahead with it, then what kind of devotion is that? Okay? Okay, it's a person's, you know, we're doing a party for somebody, and they hate, you know, chocolate cake with coconut frosting. So you demand that, no, I really want to make a chocolate cake with, I really feel like it, I just... So would you call that devotion? No, it's called your own sentiment that you just want to force on everybody else. So therefore these persons, grihasthas and ladies who demand to worship ugra forms are forcing themselves onto Krishna. It's like the sahajiyas. Sahajiyas force their way into the Braj Lila. They're not there, but they just drop in. Here I am, right? What do you think if you're having a party with like-minded persons, exactly who you wanted, and then somebody who's not from that group at all, mentality, behavior, values, anything, crashes in on the party and tries to make, here I am, Hari Bal, what would you think? Would you appreciate it? No. So that's what sahajiyas do. So that's what's going on here. They're forcing themselves in. And they can say all the things they like, oh, we don't care for this, that. Who said we don't care for the rules? Rupa Goswami gives so many rules. Sanatana Goswami, where does this we don't care for the rules come from? We don't care for Karmakanda rules or Jnanakanda rules or Upasanakanda, that means worship of the, you know, devas and stuff like that. But where is it said we don't care for rules? Right? I mean, you name something that's not a rule. We get up in the Brahma Muhurta. That's a rule. Right? We offer our obeisances when we, you know, wake up and chant the holy name. That's rules. We take a bath. We brush our teeth. We clean our tongue. We go to the toilet. We clean ourselves after cleaning that. Then we, you know, we do all these things. We remember the Lord when we take a bath. We put on tilak. We wear neck beads. We wear brahmata. We wear a sika. We wear, you know, this traditional devotional attire that some will argue that it's not, you know, Indian and all that, though Krishna wears it, so you can, you know, take your that concept and stuff it, you know, wherever you like. But the whole point is, you know, what's the, you know, you're doing this. Where are is not rules? You chant Gayatri. You go to Mangalarti. You chant 16 rounds. Why 16? Why not 15? Why not just whatever you like? Why 16? Why on beads? Why 108? You know, my favorite number is 256, you know. Like that. So what? It's all rules. So where is this? We don't care for the rules. No, it means I, as you know, having a remnant left over from my Malecha culture, that I can't really accept authority. That anything that's going to, cramp my style. Therefore, I very flippantly and without any real regard or intelligence or respect for what I'm actually saying, I'm saying it because it's good for me. Right? And people may say, no, well, we didn't really mean this and that. That means I don't want, or I wouldn't want the other person's false ego to really be hurt by actually being known that actually what the mentality is. So we're trying to hide all that and make everything nice and cover everything over, which is fine. But the point is they shouldn't be so bold. Right? The Vedic culture is sacred. The scriptures are sacred. The tradition handed down to us by the Acharyas is sacred. And to oppose it is most foolish. Most foolish. Right? You ask anybody grown up in the West how they enjoyed going to karma school, going to high school, either having to make it and be on the top, and if you're not in the top few percent, you're on the bottom. There's nothing in between. Being harassed, being pushed around, or having to push everybody else around. You know, not sure whether, you know, this girl or that boy, and this one taking that one, and everything breaking down, and having gone through so many relationships. And you ask anyone, can they sincerely from the bottom of their heart said this was great, and it was a fabulous experience? I'd like to see the person who would say that was actually nice. Or would they agree that Prabhupada said it was a slaughterhouse, completely destroying your good qualities and your hopes and everything that you had? And then after that, then to say, oh no, but I want my child to go through that. What kind of nonsense parent is that? What rich man, when his son is born, and he started from the bottom. You have these stories of the kid, he was in the slums or this or that, had nothing. And he somehow or another generated an empire. You know, one of the richest persons around. Does he make his kids start in the slums? No, but our devotees do. So what kind of culture is that? Called no culture. And it would be a topic that you could discuss, but the problem is the false ego and the emotions will get so much in the way that it is an impossible topic to discuss. Impossible. Only because of ego and sentiment. Logic, you could easily discuss it. But because the force of attachment, force of ego, is so virulent and strong, which is understood, that's why we're here in the material world. But to be so proud of it and so comfortable in it cannot be said to be a devotional quality. No one could prove it's a devotional quality. You could say what to do, it's the way it is. But no one should stand so strongly on it and confidently on it. You understand? So in other words, what we're talking about is a mentality. Your question is one symptom of that mentality. But there's so many other manifestations of the same mentality. Does that make sense? So, because your nature, your tradition, this, that, it'll come out this way. For someone else, it comes out the other way. Right? You know what I'm saying? The child themselves wants to go and do those things and that's their choice. That's another thing. Right? But it shouldn't be the parent thinks it's perfectly fine. They got destroyed. That's why they joined this movement. They joined this movement not because they were in ecstasy and happy and perfectly situated. They were dying. That's why they joined. And then they want to send their kids to the same thing? Right? And it's not even, they even teach them how to get through it. Because if you could teach them how to get through high school, you could teach them how to be, work in the movement. Because to be able to go through high school and not get destroyed by anything, to be so independent and be unaffected by all the nonsense going on, you'd have to be quite aloof, quite detached, quite, and if you can do that, then why do you need to go there? You could do it here. Right? So they can't even do that. So the point is, the philosophy is there to connect us to Krishna, not to make a mess out of the devotional process and culture. That makes sense? The culture is very broad. Right? You know, Vedic culture can manifest as Bengali or as Gujarati or South Indian or as Kashmiri. So it's very broad. It's very accommodating. But you have to know what is the Vedic culture. Right? What is the cultural point? Does that make sense? Like in the West, okay, you want to take, okay, you don't want to wear the sari, this, that, okay, fine. But now, how do the Westerners deal with the chastity and shyness of women in public? Right? To go back some years, what would you see? What country are you from?
Latvia.
Okay, let's say you go back 20 years, well, maybe you don't even know 20 years, but maybe you've seen it. Have you ever seen any of the, you know, families out where the girls and women, when they go out in public, wear black and put on black scarves and stuff? You ever seen that? You ever seen pictures of it? Huh? Never. Well, that's what they used to do. So, okay, you want to wear something else, but they're covered from head to foot. And it looks nice. It looks attractive. Ever spent any time in Germany? Okay. Ever seen the Turks out in Europe? Oh, I guess enough of this. Okay? Questions answered?
Thank you.
Okay. Jai Tal.
Thank you.